Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, and welcome to the last show of the year.
Woo-hoo. Welcome to our New Year party.
Woo-hoo. Partying it up. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Good, Tay. How you doing?
Doing all right. How you hanging in these last few weird... We're in the weird in-between between Christmas and New Year's. It just feels like no man's land. It's just...
Yeah.
I don't know. No one wants to do anything. Everybody's tired.
I'm just glad the snow and ice has melted off and we're back to normal. Well, normal, 60 degrees, and it's almost January. So I don't
think that's good for, like, the planet and stuff, but what can you do?
Man, those icy days we spent, though, those about five icy days that we had leading up to Christmas and after, boy, that was rough.
Yeah, that was a sucker punch.
Man.
Some places are still suffering from that. If you're in one of those places, best of luck to you. It's brutal.
Yeah, that morning that Riley said something about, isn't it cold outside? I said, what do you mean? The temperature's doubled. And she said, doubled? And I said, yeah, it's 2 degrees. It was only one when I got up.
Oh, it's like it's not put your drinks outside to keep them cold weather. It's don't put your drinks outside because they'll freeze and explode weather.
Yeah, when Sydney and Justin came down, they brought a couple of six packs, and Sydney stuck them on the back porch, and I said, Sid, we can't put them out there. And she said, why not? And I said, because they'll freeze and blow up. Mm-hmm. You have to put them in the refrigerator to keep them warm.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we made it anyway.
Yeah. And you joined us there for Christmas. That was good.
Got a couple days. Didn't think it was going to happen, but then it kind of got a little brief visit.
Yeah, it's funny that we never record when we're actually in the same place. You go back to New York and I stay here. Then we record.
Yeah, it always happens. Well, you know, you want to make the most of your time.
That's true.
Like, recording is fun, but sitting down and doing research alone is less fun.
Yeah.
Did you, there's so many festivities. Did you have anything good to drink this week, Dad?
Oh, well, yeah, we had lots of drinks to drink this past week. I mean, there was all kinds of things. I got a new espresso maker so we could make actual espresso martinis, and those were really good. That no egg eggnog mix that we stole from, the Red Lobster menu. We perfected that and had those. Those were good. And then, of course, I had to go with my beer of the season, Guinness.
It's a season. It's always a season for Guinness with you, though.
That's true.
It's not a seasonal thing.
What about you? What did you have that you enjoyed?
Lots of things. I don't know. I don't know if anything really stood out. I drink a lot of, just always am happy if I'm drinking bubbles. Like, that's just, you know, like, as much as I always want to, like, drink a fancy cocktail or something that, like, is historical or sophisticated, honestly, my happiest place is just drinking sparkling wine, Prosecco, Cava, champagne, if you fancy, whatever, just some sort of bubbles. And I got to do that a few times, so I was happy about that.
Yeah, I know you like the bubbles.
I do. Nothing makes me happier than bubbles.
Oh, and then we did get a smoker, and we were going to smoke some bourbon. And then what we found out is we didn't realize we got the smoker, and it needed butane. And it didn't come with butane, and we didn't have access to butane. We got to find butane.
Smokers are, I don't know. I mean, hopefully y'all can make that one work, but yeah.
So we just had to drink the bourbon straight, no smoke.
That's okay. Well, the room smelled like smoke anyway.
Yeah, the room smelled like it. We just couldn't get it to go down into the glass.
Well, so it is. It is. We are the dregs of 2022. So kind of like what we did last year, I thought we could just sort of do a little bit of a year in review. Just sort of look back on some of the trends we talked about this year, some of the popular cocktails, some of the weird little moments in drinking culture, and then, you know, reflect on some of our own personal favorites, and then maybe take a look at what we think is going to happen in 2023.
Where have we been and where are we going?
There you go. So just to get right into it, you know, there are a lot of things that were interesting this year in drinking. One of the ones that, and this was a trend I would say the year before too, but it really settled in this year, was low alcohol cocktails and no alcohol spirits being very, very popular.
Mm-hmm. Some of the bigger brands coming out with the non-alcoholic versions of their drinks, and mm-hmm. the low and the no, I can understand that, because some people just want to enjoy the flavor without worrying about, you know, the DUI or something.
Absolutely. Well, you know, like, I think, especially like with the, I mean, some of the no alcohol spirits, that it's interesting to me that it's like price point on the same, like same amount you'd pay for something with alcohol, just, you know, just no alcohol. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's a good thing, because I think people just like to drink tasty things more than they necessarily need the alcohol there. So I feel like that's a good niche to fill.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And, you know, it's better for your liver and stuff, too.
Absolutely.
Your liver will thank you.
So I think that's going to continue to be a thing, you know. This has been a thing for a minute, but it's something that even I've tried to apply the principles of, like, I don't think we've ever talked about this directly, but, like, the sober curious movement. Does that, mm-hmm. that phrase ring a bell?
No, I have not heard of that.
It's more of a kind of a middle ground to, like, hardline, like, you know, like sort of AA, like sobriety, like you stop drinking, you're done for good, or you drink and that's what you do. There's a movement that's been going on for a while now that's more sober curious, where it's like, you know, you sub in other things for alcohol on nights, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's like your cauliflower rice for your regular rice kind of idea, you know.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can go out to have drinks with a friend, but maybe for every drink I have with alcohol, I have an alcohol-free drink, you know, mm-hmm. like that you can mix in sobriety with your drinking, and it's just a part of, like, it's a little healthier, it's a little better for you, it's a habit, and I like that. I feel like that's, I don't know if I would ever want to never drink, but trying to, like, incorporate some of the principles of, like, this sober curious movement, I find to be a little bit more workable for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that definitely has its benefits. And like you say, you know, people don't want to be left out. And you go to a party and you're drinking water, you're drinking Cokes, and there's always somebody saying, oh, come on, loosen up, have a drink. Well, if you're having a cocktail that just doesn't happen to have alcohol in it, people aren't so likely to peer pressure you into drinking if you don't want to, for whatever reason.
And I think that's a bit of a cultural shift too, you know, that it's less, you know, it's, we're going to go out and have, we're going to treat ourselves somehow. And it's not about, like, let's get wasted. And that's good. That is good as a culture.
That's right.
Just all over the map here. One thing that, obviously a cocktail trend this year, it was a trend, it was a meme. I don't know. We had the Negroni Spagliato moment. The Negroni Spagliato with Prosecco in it.
Yeah, I think that meme is what really set it off more than anything, more than the drink itself. Now, I'm sure that there's people that like those, but that the Negroni or the Spagliato, that's not for me.
You didn't like either one?
No, neither one. No. I'm just not for it. That's too bitter of a drink or something for me. I'm not a fan.
That was kind of the funny response to that, is that there were so many people that tried it and then were not happy with it. They're like, oh, this is bad. And it's like, no, it's just, the Negroni is a very specific drink. Yeah. We talked about it. Like, it's not going to be any less bitter. So, you know, if you tried one this year, sorry.
Now, Mom discovered the Negroni, you know, before the Spagliato got added on there, and she liked them. She'd say, oh, taste this drink. It's so good. And I took a drink and went, oh, God, what's in there? Turpentine? That's awful. So I was not a fan at all.
Well, I feel like part of that is that it was a sort of a TikTok trend cocktail, you know, and that tends to be a younger crowd. And as we've talked about in the past, your palate develops over time. You get more used to bitter flavors over time. You know, when I first started drinking, I thought a Manhattan was too bitter. I couldn't drink a Manhattan without, you know, like reacting. So it's a trend that sort of presented itself to a very young crowd, but it's made for sort of an older palate, you know, just a bit of a mismatched audience there. more in line, I think, with the younger crowd was the summer of the Dirty Shirley, which we lived through. It was the alcoholic Shirley Temple, so classic Shirley Temple, just grenadine and Sprite or ginger ale, and then, you know, to make it dirty, you throw some vodka in there. That was a weird thing to see kind of brought in as it's not really a cocktail. It's kind of like, it's one of those drinks that if somebody orders, you double check their ID, or they're somebody from the industry. Like, there's no in between until this year.
Yeah. And that became popular. I don't know. The name of it alone would be enough to turn me off from ordering it.
Yeah, well, it's named after Shirley Temple as a child, so it does feel not right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I want a dirty Shirley.
It's like a dirty martini. I don't know.
Just add some alcohol. Just take old Shirley and throw some alcohol in her.
It is a good, I do think there are the makings of a good drink there when you're dealing with like fresh grenadine, a good base spirit. I mean, Sprite is Sprite, but a good ginger ale or a good ginger beer even, like you can make a good drink out of that. But hey, if you're worried about the sanitary nature of your cocktail, you can always drink a canned cocktail. That was big this year.
Yeah, those are growing bigger too, and you know, you've got, like we alluded to from our one about the Bar Masters episodes, is that both the judges on there have their own list of canned cocktails that they endorse. So, you know, that is seems to be a growing industry, and who knows, with canned cocktails growing, my wish is for in 2023 they bring on the Chuhai.
Hey, you know, that's the one thing. We've talked about it so many times. There is Evil Twin Brewing Company, which has a tasting room in my neighborhood. They released something called Ramen Water, which was their take on a Chuhai. My friends and I actually ventured there to try it, and apparently all the cases were on reserve, so you could not try it in their actual tasting room, which was a bit of a letdown, but maybe I'll get to try it next year.
Well, I have to say, that doesn't sound as appealing to me. No. Ramen water as lemon Chuhai sounds delicious. Ramen water sounds like what's left over in the pan after a college student makes ramen.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, maybe it's good. Who knows? But yes, the canned cocktail. And, you know, there were a lot of trends this year that kind of spun off from how lockdown changed the way we drink, that we went without cocktail bars, access to bars for such a while there, that being able to go to your liquor store and get a good cocktail meant like that was a new market that opened up.
Yeah.
And I think we don't, like, that's not going to go away. It's just a new way of drinking, because why go to a bar and spend $15, $16 for a cocktail when you can go to your liquor store and get a 4-pack of nice cocktails for, you know, that same $15 and go to your park and drink it, or go to your roof, or go to your backyard, whatever. I don't think that's going to go away. If anything, my fear is that we lose fresh drinking culture because canned cocktails become such a norm that now that I'm seeing them served in bars, I'm like, oh no, this is what happened in the 80s.
Yeah. If they're just popping a top and pouring it in a glass of ice, that's not good.
You should make it fresh here. If you're charging me $15, I want you to make it.
Yeah, that's more for convenience, like a picnic or to take home for a party or something like that, maybe, where you just want the convenience. But it shouldn't be your everyday drinking.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, in that sort of same threshold of canned cocktails, one thing that I've seen pop up, especially here in New York, but I'm sure in other cities that have had different – have changes to their laws regarding, you know, whatever – marijuana, THC, CBD, even that was outlawed for a while, but now it's okay. I've seen a lot of cocktails that are actually, they're alcohol free, but they have some sort of the THC cocktails or the CBD, like that's a more popular thing that I'm seeing, where it is a cocktail flavor profile. It just has an infusion of some kind. So it's mind altering in a different way.
Yeah. I have not encountered any of those. It seems like I saw a beer that supposedly had THC in it one time, but I don't know. I don't think I had it because I wasn't too sure about it.
Well, I think that's going to, especially as, you know, I mean, here in New York, like it's been, oh, I don't know the legal definition. I know that like you can't, like they're, eventually people will be able to sell it recreationally. We're just not, the licenses haven't been figured out yet, but we're going to eventually get there. And I think that's going to become a very big market very quickly, not just for canned versions, but also like in bars. You know, I think I envision like, you know, cocktail bars that maybe are alcohol free, but they have a license for THC to be a thing.
Sure. If it's legal recreationally, somebody will find a way to get it in a drink.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, well, we've already found out. I've already maybe had some drinks illegally in bars that have it in it just fine. But once it's legal, I think it'll be a grounds for whole new businesses.
Yeah, you could smoke your bourbon with marijuana.
And you literally smoke your bourbon.
Yeah.
Well, and I think sort of along that same line of like us getting like with the low ABV movement, with the alternative ways of sort of getting a little messy that aren't alcohol based. We've seen like other, you know, we already had like kombucha has been a thing for a while. Mm-hmm. People have, that's been done. Hard kombucha has been a thing for a couple years now. There are some new brands out, which are cool, but like, I thought it was cool to see other sort of fermented beverages that may or may not have alcohol in them become hits. We talked, I think last year we talked about tepache. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, that's fermented from pineapple rinds. Now right. I'm seeing like canned versions and alcoholic versions hit the shelf, which I think is really cool because that's a kind of when we researched it and talked about it, it was a bit of a, it was lesser known in America, and that's,
right.
I think it, now it's everywhere.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I mean, I know we saw it in your deli, the kombucha.
Kombucha, tepache, kefir, just all sorts of different. They're fermented. They may have alcohol. They may not. You know, it's also, I mean, it's a sign of a developing American palate. For so long, I think the American palate was so heavy on the sweet. And we really are seeing a sort of a dive into the direction of sour, both with all these fermentable beverages, but also like, again, this was another year that was really strong for like sour beers and gozas, like a lot of those, like big brewing companies making those as like their standard drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I know you had a few this year, right?
A few sours and gozas?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I started trying them out mostly because of the stuff we were talking about, and the sours, I don't really care for those so much, but some of the gozas are really good. It's almost like
margaritas. It's a margarita beer.
Yeah. The salt finish on the end is what's so good to me, and you get that little bit of margarita taste in a beer with the salt finish, and they're pretty good. We went and got some of those. Riley and I did at the beer festival that they had here back this summer. And we went to and specifically sought out some of the gozas to see how they were. And I won't say I like all of them, but there were quite a few that I found to be pretty tasty.
Well, it's interesting that has been such a trend, because for so long a lot of what we're talking about is specifically the American drinking market, because, hey, that's all we know. But for so long, the IPA and the giant, big, bitter as hell beers, like that was the trend. You know, you were fine sitting down to like a $14 beer that was like 10% and it tasted like it kicked you in the face, and that's what you wanted. And to see like the sour beers and the gozas paired with like the, you know, the fermentable, like the sour things, the more like acidic things. It's definitely just showing just a change in palate, a broadening in palate. But you know, it also kind of goes in line with like the continual domination of hard seltzer as like a popular, like the fact that like 21-year-olds, like those baby drinkers, are drinking hard seltzer instead of what like my generation drank, which was whatever, like Boone's Farm or like, whatever. What am I thinking of? Like the wine cooler kind of stuff, the super sweet
Bartles and James.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like it's interesting because it's, I think we're seeing like a crowd that was introduced to drinking with a different, a less sweet palate, and how their tastes progress, you know, compared to ours.
Oh, well, those hard seltzers, they are just continue to grow and grow. And I mean, here's the thing with those, I guess they're mass making them enough where they've got a pretty good price point, because you see younger folks leaving out of the store with like a case under each arm, you know,
yeah.
They're buying them in bulk and going through them. So they're not real high ABV, for the most part. And, you know, they've got a good price point. So that does seem to be like the college age type of drink.
Yeah. Well, and you see, like, they get, you know, they're the brands that come out and they do, like, more creative or more nuanced things with them, you know, that have, like, the Boozy Owl or that does, like, the tea-based hard seltzers, which are a little bit more nuanced. But I don't think anything sells as well as just, like, the classic, like, it tastes like sparkling water, like a clearly Canadian with some vodka in it. Like, that's it, you know?
Well, I feel like they have improved them some. The first generation of them were kind of generic tasting, and I feel like that they have improved on that, and they are getting closer to making a, maybe not a Chew High worthy beverage, but they are gaining ground on those.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that I thought as I was sort of doing some research, just looking back at like what sold this year physically, and it's almost a little bit of a depressing point. But it's the truth that there's been a real return to cheaper domestic beers in the American market. Like, and it's really two things coming together. It's that during the pandemic, people started drinking a lot more. That just happened. I get it. Mm-hmm. I was there. We all were there. But also, hey, we're also dealing with, you know, people going without work, recessions, all sorts of scary financial things. People are also drinking on a budget. So you have a lot, like the sales for very basic, cheap domestic beers, things like Budweiser and, you know, Miller High Life and
Natty Light.
Yeah, like these things are really like pushing through more than they have in previous years, like making a headway over craft markets, because you just have a lot of people that's, I don't know. You know, there's also, I think, a return to, I mean, I think this is sort of evidence in the drink, like the Dirty Shirley being popular. It's like there's a bit of a nostalgia thing. Like, I just want something simple. I don't want some decadent cocktail. I don't want something farm to table. I don't want some overpriced craft beer. I just want something simple and cheap and comfortable.
Well, the thing that amazes me, the one that amazes me that's still around from back in my childhood is Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I just do not understand the draw to that, but you can go in these craft beer places and they'll have all these craft beers, all the IPAs, all the porters, all the stouts, gozes, sours, all these things. And then at the bottom, Pabst Blue Ribbon. So you just get a Pabst Blue Ribbon if you want, you know, and that's just amazing to me. And that's what I see in the craft bars more so than like either Miller or Budweiser. Like, they might have Miller or Budweiser back there, but they don't really advertise that. But Pabst Blue Ribbon, they put that one out there. And my own opinion is that was a crappy beer when I was in college. I don't think they're doing anything different with it now.
Well, but I mean, PBR was big in my college days. Like, that was the hipster beer. That's what you went and drank, you know, in art school in Brooklyn.
Well, it's still hanging in there, though.
Well, I don't know if it's just that, like, my generation is older now, and that's kind of now, it's a weird double nostalgia thing, where it's like, oh, yeah, I drank that when I was 18, illegally in a bar. Because I could say that, like, yeah, that's what I drank, PBR. You know, is it a combination of, like, again, that nostalgia thing? Where it's like, yeah, this was good beer back in my day. Like, no, it was never good, but it's fine. Just drink what you can afford.
When I was a kid back in the 70s, probably the beer I drank the most of was Miller. That was what I liked when they came out with Miller Genuine Draft, and I switched over to that and liked that. But the one that really that I still really enjoy, that when you come across it here and there, is Rolling Rock.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Rolling Rock, we used to get that when I was a kid, and oh man, that was always good then, and I still enjoy it sometimes now.
I only associate Rolling Rock with there was a friend of mine who was at the time, she was building her tattoo portfolio. She wasn't like an official tattoo artist yet, but she would give you free tattoos if you let her tattoo on you and she could take a picture of it for her portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So you would get tattooed in her kitchen. And she would offer you, she just always had like giant 24 packs of Rolling Rock that you could drink while you're getting tattooed. And that's my only association with Rolling Rock. It's just drinking a Rolling Rock while I was getting tattooed on somebody's kitchen counter. Luckily, she was a very talented tattoo artist. Now she's a very expensive, very professional, very skilled lady. But that's my only association with Rolling Rock.
It's those green bottles made in Latrobe, Pennsylvania.
See, I had the cans. But.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's been some of the trends, I mean, when we look at it as a whole picture, the fact that we're going more towards things in cans, things are portable, things that are simple, things that are sort of deviating from like classic cocktail culture. I think as much as it kind of makes me sad as somebody that appreciates like cocktail culture, I think it makes sense that we're having a bit of a reaction. You know, we had that period from the 90s to the early 2000s, we were really getting deep into like, oh, it's the cocktail revival. And we really puffed it up as much as it could. I think that show we watched, Bar Masters is really the epitome of that. Like how pretentious and how overblown and how extravagant. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a really hard left that drinking culture has taken where it's like, I don't want to spend $20 on a drink because you did all this stuff that doesn't make it taste better. Like, I don't
exactly.
want that anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that was a natural thing. Like, I've been saying for a while now, like, no, just make good drinks. Don't make expensive drinks. Those are two different things. But yeah. I think we're seeing that in the trends and that people want, they would rather get something simple. They'd rather get something cheaper. If they're going to get something complex, if I can get it in a can and take it home, that's fine, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do something, I say that infusion is a way to go. You know, do some infusion in your simple syrup or do something in your, you know, in your base spirit or something like that, and then make a drink from there. You don't need to mix together 20 ingredients and say, look at this great cocktail, because nobody's going to want to sit there and mix 20 ingredients all night to make your drink.
Well, and I mean, there's a sort of economic extravagance that's implied with that I don't know, if you're in certain economic classes in America, you're not feeling it, good for you, but a lot of us, it's like I haven't sat down at a cocktail bar maybe a handful of times this year, and that's sort of what I do because it's just like, man, I can go home and make myself a drink. And I think there's also that, honestly. And, you know, maybe we contributed that to a little bit, but like once people realize, like once they get the keys to the castle, they realize how to make drinks, it's like, what am I, you know, like I can make a good drink at my house. I can shake up a good margarita. I can stir up a good Negroni. Like I can do this on my own. And I mean, that's just a natural progression. You get it, you know, people know what you're doing. You got to do it well and you can't get by on bullshit.
Well, I've become kind of a snob about it, not from a financial point, but I know what I like and I know what it takes to make a drink. Now, I didn't, you know, before I started this, you know, being on this with you, I didn't know what it took to make a drink or how they balanced them or how they interacted. Now that I know some of that kind of stuff, you know, I go in there and I get a drink and I taste no alcohol and a whole lot of sugar. Well, I know they just had some kind of mix back there, and they probably added just a half a shot, or maybe they didn't put hardly anything in there, you know? And I don't want to drink like that. Now, I'm not saying I want to drink one drink and get smashed, but I want to know I'm having a drink.
Well, you want to know that you're getting something of quality. Like, that's why nowadays, like, I order simple drinks, and I just want them to be made right. Like, you know, we were out, and, like, I ordered a margarita. It's like, okay, I just know you've got all these weird flavored margaritas. Mm-hmm. I just want to have your house margarita. And if that's good, I'm happy because I still argue that I don't think I've met a margarita alteration that's better than just a margarita. So if you can do that right, that's great. But also, there should be kind of a price point on that, and that's it. Like, it shouldn't go higher than that. No matter how many adjectives you add to it, that doesn't increase the price.
Well, I mean, that was a good margarita. I tasted yours and decided I needed one. But you know, like the price point on that was $7.50.
Well, that was in West Virginia, but still, yeah.
Right, but what I mean is they did offer a margarita too, and it just had, I guess, higher quality ingredients, and it was $14. Well, you know what? I could enjoy that $7.50 margarita, $14 margarita. It better be really good, or I'm going to be disappointed.
Well, that's, I think that, you know, we gotta hold the line in the cocktail industry of, you like, things should be at a certain price when they're made right, but mm-hmm. it's not about made expensive. It's about made right. It's not about, here's 15 complicated ingredients that you're going to have to wait 15 minutes for the drink. It's, I know the history, I know the drink, I know the balance, and I did it right. And I'll pay a lot for that. You know, yeah. I have no problem. I would actually rather sit down and, like, here's $15 for a beautifully made old fashioned than something that's been smoked and infused and flipped upside down and mm-hmm. served in a shoe. Like, I just want to just give it to me good and right, and we're good.
Well, that was a good margarita the other day.
Wow. Well, all right. So that's a little, just a brief review over some of the trends we talked about, some of the high points, weird points of 2022 drinking. But Dad, I wanna get personal now.
All right.
All right. A little Q&A. What was your favorite? I don't know, whatever you had this year. It can be a cocktail. It can be a beer. I know it's not gonna be a wine. It can be a beverage.
I think that I found that my simple go-to that I like, that I never knew I liked, is a whiskey sour.
Yeah.
A well-made whiskey sour. It doesn't need anything fancy. You know, and I like that. And I like it made with a rye whiskey. And I think that's really good. One of the other drink that I discovered I didn't know about, well, I don't mean I discovered it. I discovered it for me, not for the world, is the espresso martini.
Yeah.
I mean, those are really good. And you know, it's just a right, for me, it's just right. But here's the one that surprised me the most that I like, that I've found because of doing this, is Iraq.
Really?
Yeah,
I sip on that a lot. That's right.
Yeah, I got a bottle of Ouzo and a bottle of Iraq. Now, the Ouzo's okay, but the Iraq, I really enjoyed that. Yeah, I poured it in that little glass about a third of the way full. Then I'd fill it up the rest of the way, the other two-thirds with water, with cold water, and drink that. And that was just so nice to just sit there and sip on. I remember I had that most nights when I came home from doing the outdoor theater this summer. And we'd get home late at night. And I didn't want to drink a bunch of heavy stuff before I went to bed, so I'd mix me up a couple of little Iraqs and drink those. Those were very, very nice, and I never would have even known what it was.
That's I feel like that fits, you know, like you just sip on your little Iraq late at night. That's a cool, like, cool partier image.
Yeah. What about you?
Oh, man, you know, I feel like, I know we first talked about Strega last year, and I think I might have even mentioned that last year in our year in review, but I feel like I've continued this year. This was like a weird yellow, like, spirit year, because there was Strega and there was also Suze, and those were sort of my two favorite things to mess around with. Just like very strong, like a little, like very bitter, very floral, but I'm really, like, I don't know. I think for so much of my early cocktailing, I was very much like a cooking bartender. So it was all about infusions or syrups or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm really getting into just kind of learning a modifier really well, so you know how to bring it out. And those were the two that really stood out to me this year. Like, just for the color they bring to the table, for the unique floral bitterness. This is just my weird floral bitter year.
Well, we had a bottle of Strega, and Mom went through that. She liked using that in a lot of her cocktails. And the other thing she liked using was the Lillet.
Oh, yeah. Love Lillet. Love Lillet. I don't know. Made a lot of, I don't know. And, you know, a lot of just like basic plays with those, like subbing subbing Strega or Suze into things like, you know, a Negroni, into, you know, like a last word build, and just sort of playing with that. Just simple substitutions into classic builds with something that I like, and just modifying the other ingredients. I really enjoyed that this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of along the same lines, is that, like, Arrak, is that, would you consider that your favorite new spirit that you discovered this year?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
Yep, it's that's good. It's just it's nice for sipping. That's one of the ones that, you know, drink it just the way that it is in where they developed it, you know, as opposed to mixing it with something. Just add the cold water to it and drink it just like that, and I like that.
I think for me, and I've worked with Old Tom gin before, and in my mind it was always just sweet gin because that's how I was introduced to it. And after we did that episode on it and learned that it's a bit more of a historical moment in gin as it is a specific flavor, I feel like that was the spirit that was most interesting to me this year, was actually seeking out different Old Tom gins and like, oh, wait, these are all, it's really just, it's an anything goes category, but it's got some really cool history to it.
Yeah.
That intrigues you. You should go back and listen to that episode if you haven't yet. But it really was just a moment when gin was largely illegal and everybody was making it their own way. It was, you know, maybe aged, maybe not, maybe sweet, maybe not. It's all sorts of stuff, but.
Yeah, well, I'm not really a gin fan, but I did like the Old Tom gin as opposed to just regular gin. It doesn't do much for me, but I had a bad experience with that as a youngster, so I think that has part to do with it.
I think a lot of people have a bad experience with gin as a youngster because that's one of those spirits that when it's bad, it's bad, you know?
Well, I don't think it was bad. I think it was just overindulged.
Or that.
I never wanted to see it again after that.
Well, we kind of touched on this when we were talking about our trends, but do you have any predictions for next year, alcohol-wise? Do you think you see where things are going?
No, I don't think I have any idea. It's all new to me. But, I mean, I see the hard seltzer market continuing to grow and probably the canned cocktails continuing to grow. You know, in some respects, you know, I can see that for the home, it's easier to keep cans of the already made cocktails than to keep your bar stocked with the bottles you need and fresh juices and all that. So I can see those continuing, especially if they're made well.
Yeah. I hope, this is less of a prediction and more of a hope, is that seeing as how like the canned cocktail market, the home bartender, there's a lot of areas that are going to crowd out. Also just the fact that people have less money, like, that overpriced, expensive bar experience, I don't think is going to be as stable as it has been in the past. I think we're going to kind of burst that bubble of the craft cocktail resurgence started. And I hope that there's a return to, you know, when we talk about the elements that that launched the resurgence of craft cocktails in America, we always make it about the drinks, but really it was about, like, you know, like we talked about Dale DeGroff this year. He was a barman. He was welcoming, he was knowledgeable, he was somebody fun to watch behind the bar, and he was making classic, simple drinks. I hope that comes back. Like, having like a $12, I mean, I'm talking New York prices here, having like a $12 cocktail menu, or $10 cocktail menu, oh my gosh, only $10, and it's classics, and they're well made, but they're not overpriced. You don't use overpriced liquors. We talk a lot about on the show, like, you know, you don't need a $60 whiskey to make a good old fashioned. You can do it with a $25. You can use an Old Overhaul. You can use Four Roses, you know, like a return to that where we're picking the right ingredients. We're mixing them with respect and with a little bit of personality, a little bit of flourish, but we don't need to have the whole kitchen cabinet in the drink. We can just do classics, and that'll meet the price point that people can afford. That'll meet the price point the bars can afford, because you're not paying for a ton of extra stuff. But, like, bring the person back to the bar, because we're gonna lose it against the canned cocktails and the home bartenders. You gotta bring the bartender back to the bar, and I hope that happens.
Three or four ingredients that you can put together and make a drink. Anything more than that is, you know.
There will always be a place for those high-end bars. There are always going to be those people that, you know, can afford to go out. But I just think that the staying power is going to be, in the classic drinks, the classic structures, and the bartenders that truly enjoy making it and make the customers, like, a part of the experience. So I hope there's a bit more of that and a bit less of the Yeah, all the other stuff.
Yeah. I'll go along with that.
Hey. All right. So, Dad, what was your 2022 cocktail of the year?
Well, my guess is it was the espresso martini.
Well, all right.
Because I can tell you at the start of 2022, I don't think I'd ever heard of it. But now it seems like I encounter it everywhere. And it's not a hard one to make. I mean, there's just a few ingredients, and it's, if you have good espresso, it's a nice balanced drink.
I think that is true. I think we talked about it last summer as sort of the cocktail of the summer, but I do think it takes a while for something to, like, you know, get coast to coast.
Well, that rooftop bar that we pointed out to you that we've been to a couple of times, when I looked through their menu, the one that stood out to me was the espresso martini. I tried it. They did it well. It was a good drink. And, you know, it's something that's easy to make at home if you've got an espresso maker, or if you can just get some, you know, cold brew or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a fair call. I mean, I feel like I want to say that for my opinion, it was the Negroni Spagliato. As much as many people encountered it and didn't like it, I think that's a good representation of, like, you know, something gets popular on social media, everybody tries it and then just, you know, has a problem with it. Like, I think that's very much where we're at right now. Like, you guys got to trust your own palate. Don't trust what people are selling you.
Yeah. Well, it might have been the most meme worthy, but yes. I don't think that it gained in consumption.
No. No, I don't know. I think every year just belongs to, I don't know, rosé spreading out in all directions. It's just, you know, the cocktail of the year was whatever got you through 2022, because it was another one.
Well, I can tell you there's a bar near where Riley lives now in D.C. that has the frosé, and that's become one of her go-tos, her and her friends, that they go there after classes or on the weekends, and they go for the frosé, and that place does it right. Yeah. Nothing fancy, but it's good.
Well, I mean, that's it. That's our look back on the year. Do you have any, what are your New Year's plans? You have any cocktails you're planning for New Year's, Dad?
Well, we're just going to a small party at Michael, my brother-in-law, at his house. His birthday is New Year's Eve. He's a New Year's Eve baby. Oh. And so we're going there, just some family, and going and celebrating his birthday and the New Year's. Nothing fancy. We'll probably just go with beers. I'm not sure what other kind of bar they've got set up there. So probably just be my old faithful Guinness I'll stock up on.
Nice.
What about you?
Well, I'm working a double on New Year's Eve. So I guess I will just sneak a little baby bottle of Prosecco into my bag and pour myself a little plastic cup at midnight between taking out trash or something disgusting.
You're supposed to be drinking a double, not working a double.
Yeah, I wish. Not this year. I always feel bad. I used to feel cursed because, you know, they say, well, like, what you do at midnight is what you're gonna do for the rest of the year. Like, that's one of those New Year's superstitions. And I don't know. I felt like 3 years in a row, and I mean, I worked food service most of my adult life. Like, I would find myself tying up a trash can at midnight. Like, just inevitably, like, it just, you know, we'd be busy and I'd be taking out trash and I'd be like, oh, the ball's dropping. I'm like, you know, I'm taking out trash. And I promise myself I will never put myself in a position to be taking out trash at midnight, because I feel like that just, I'm not the most superstitious person, but that kind of defines my adult life. So, like, after a few years of just, like, having the night off, and maybe it's not just a superstition, maybe that's just my life, I'm just going to pick up the shift.
Well, let's hope that you're having a drink there at midnight instead.
Well, we'll see. But wait, whatever you're doing at New Year's, I hope you have a happy and safe celebration. I hope you have something tasty and delicious or celebratory somehow, you know.
Something maybe neat inspired.
Yeah, you know, we did a couple episodes on different superstitions, so, you know, check back on those. Drink your bubbles, eat your 12 grapes. Burn your bay leaves, If you're have don't eat like what are we supposed to eat caviar, like eat fancy stuff, wear red underwear, yellow underwear. I don't, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of superstitions.
No, yellow kiss underwear somebody. Needs to go in the washing machine.
Yeah, that's. I think that's for luck. It's not.
Oh.
Whatever you do to invite the best luck in the new year, I hope you do it. And
have a happy new year.
Yeah, have a good one. Thank you, Dad, for another year of Neat the Boozecast.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. It's been an adventuresome year and learned much.
Oh, there's more to learn. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you to our Patreon for supporting us. You're the reason this podcast gets made. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Instagram, and you can also reach us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to talk about your favorite New Year's traditions, you can do that.
Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook.
We'll do that. And again, I hope you all have a happy and safe New Year. I have been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. Be forgotten, never brought to mind. To mind.
Sure.
Da, 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 da. Oh, yeah, an old anxiety.
Yeah, that's definitely the words.
This got something like that.
Happy New New.
Happy New New.